Welcome to the Loving Wellness Podcast, your compass to embracing a holistic approach to health, one that extends love not only to your body and spirit, but also ripples outward to those around you. I'm your host, Ava Nori, a registered dietitian and your wellness BFF. Together, we'll dive deep into all the ways you can practice loving wellness in your own life and tap into the healthiest, happiest, most aligned version of yourself through both solo episodes and conversations with experts in many fields. Let's get into the show. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Loving Wellness Podcast. And happy Valentine's Day if you're listening to this on the day it's being released. If not, I hope you're having an amazing day, regardless of what day it is. But this episode is going to be my part two for the wellness Q&A I've been doing. So a couple weeks ago in the last solo episode, I did part one of this wellness Q&A where I asked you all on Instagram to submit your questions to me. And there was a good amount of questions, so I wanted to make the episode split into two so it wouldn't be too long. So this is part two. If you want to listen to part one, definitely do so. That's episode 57, two episodes ago. In that episode, I covered a lot of topics. I talked about how to balance hormones, my favorite anti-inflammatory foods, holistic tips to help resolve acid reflux, my favorite current wellness trends, and lots of other things. So make sure to go listen to that if you haven't already. And I'm just going to jump into today's episode and get into the remaining questions. So the first question is, how do I eat more protein? This is a great question. I love talking about protein lately. If you aren't familiar with me and my story, I was vegan for almost 8 years, and I'm no longer vegan. I have switched my diet to a diet that's more balanced, but also very based in animal protein, meaning I eat animal-based protein foods 3 times a day at every meal. So if you're trying to eat more protein and you don't already include high-quality animal protein sources at every meal, I would say that's a great place to start. So including a good source of animal-based, meaning something like a muscle meat, chicken, turkey, poultry, fish, beef, or eggs, or even something like a whey protein powder, a beef isolate protein powder, even dairy can count depending on the dairy product. But I would aim to include a good quality source of protein at every meal if you're not already doing so. And another one of my favorite ways to get more protein in the day is to set myself up for success by eating enough protein in the mornings. And for me, that typically looks like eating at least 30 grams of protein, a high-quality animal-based source of protein at breakfast. And then another thing I tell a lot of my clients is let's find ways to add protein to things you're already eating and already love to eat. So for example, if you love your oatmeal in the morning, I'm not gonna make you stop eating your oatmeal, but let's try adding some high quality protein powder to the oatmeal while you're cooking it, and maybe some chia seeds for some extra plant protein. Another example is maybe you love having pizza once a week for dinner. Let's find a way to add some protein onto the pizza. Maybe it's adding some chicken, making it a barbecue chicken pizza. Maybe you can use something like a chickpea crust, which is pretty high in protein compared to just a normal crust, and then adding the chicken onto that. That way you're having a nice animal-based source of protein that's high quality, and you're also doing a chickpea crust, which is higher in protein. So these are just like different swaps and adds to really boost the protein content of what you're already eating. And then another part of this, which I encourage a lot of people to do, especially when starting out on a higher protein journey, is to incorporate protein-rich snacks into your day, especially if you're already snacking, but it's on things that are a little bit lighter or not as protein dense. You could maybe start with a protein shake for a snack with a really high quality protein powder, like a whey isolate. Or I even encourage people to, you know, if you have leftover meat, leftover chicken, leftover ground beef, whatever it is from the night before, have a couple bites of that with some veggies. Maybe it's some carrot, you know, baby carrots and some hummus. Or maybe you want to do little deli meat wraps. So I love doing like veggies wrapped in a few slices of turkey breast or chicken breast, or even just a hard-boiled egg for a snack. That's a great snack. I have a lot of clients who also love snacking on beef sticks or turkey sticks from Chomps or Paleo Valley, those like the healthier jerky sticks, basically. Those are all great options to make sure that you're upping your protein intake throughout the day so that you're meeting your protein goals. And what I typically live by is 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, not kilogram, per pound. And this is much higher than the recommended dietary allowance, the RDA, for protein, but I think that that number is very low. And if you're looking for optimal longevity, but also muscle growth and bone density and blood sugar balance and so many other things, I think that 0.8 grams per kilogram, which is the RDA, is not enough for most people. Okay, next one says tips for better sleep. And I really wanted to answer this one because I have gone into a big hole, a deep dive on circadian biology. And it is truly fascinating. I keep talking about morning sunlight on Instagram. If you're not following me on Instagram, by the way, make sure to do so. That's where you can ask these questions. Anytime I do a Q&A, I'll do my question box on Instagram. And that is where you'll find a lot more wellness content from me. But that is truly what has been on my mind right now, is circadian rhythms, circadian biology, optimizing sleep, and this whole world that I've just been fascinated by and just trying to absorb as much as I can from. So in terms of circadian rhythms and circadian biology, the most important things for better sleep and just for making sure you have a healthy circadian rhythm is making sure you're getting sunlight at correct times in the day, and then making sure you're blocking artificial blue light at correct times in the day. Those are kind of the two main things to focus on when it comes to circadian rhythm and resetting your circadian rhythm. For morning sunlight, it's super important to get morning sunlight as close to sunrise as possible, which I feel like a lot of people don't talk about when morning sunlight is brought up. It's like, oh, just wake up and get morning sunlight right when you wake up, which you definitely should do if you aren't already doing. But I was in a really bad place with my sleep just, 6 months ago, where I was waking up at like 8:30 a.m., going to bed at like 1 a.m., which is so unlike me, but I was traveling all summer and it was just really hard to get back into a routine. And the only thing that helped me really come back into a very optimal sleep schedule that I'm happy with, where I wake up at like 6 to 6:30 every day, is this circadian stuff. And I gotta give credit where credit's due. Amanda Montalvo at Hormone Healing RD, and also Carrie Bennett, who is a circadian biology expert, are the two people who have really helped me understand these concepts better. So shout out to them. But back to what I was saying with the sunrise light, I guess I actually need to backtrack a little bit and explain why light is so important. Sunlight is a signal to our bodies. Our brains have this master clock inside of them called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, and that little master clock inside of us, it needs a signal to know when to produce certain hormones. It needs to know when to make certain processes go off in the body and when to stop certain processes. Processes that rely on circadian rhythms, that rely on light to happen, and then for the lack of light or darkness to not happen. So with that light signal that we're getting, we need to signal to our bodies that it is light out so that we can create all the downstream effects: hormone production, sex hormone production, thyroid hormone production, serotonin production. That's why morning sunlight is so important for mood. It's so important for thyroid health. It's so important for hormone balancing. So getting light close to sunrise, or right when the sun rises, is one of those signals that is going to tell our bodies to start to produce certain hormones, start to do all of these different processes. That's one of the really important times to get morning sunlight. And then so is this time called UVA rise. And UVA rise, specifically, this time of when UVA light starts to become available to us, which is when the sun is 10 to 30 degrees above the horizon. I know this is getting really nitty gritty, but bear with me. getting sunlight at that time as well, which is usually around an hour after the sun rises, that is another really important time to have all of these different processes go off to produce specifically serotonin, specifically thyroid hormone, and specifically sex hormones. The sunrise light also helps with these things because it helps regulate our inner body clock, but UVA rise specifically is very important for those processes as well. So those are the two kind of main times that I like to get morning sunlight and that really help with sleep too. The sunrise light is really helpful, especially for getting better sleep. It's because you are signaling to your body that the day has started, that light is now available to you so that you can start producing cortisol, because you want cortisol to be higher in the mornings. And it also sets you up for success to create melatonin at the correct time at night. And that is why it's really important for sleep, is because we want to have high cortisol in the morning, low melatonin in the morning, so we're not falling asleep when we wake up. And then at night, we want to have low cortisol and then high melatonin. We want to be able to fall asleep and use that melatonin to our advantage so that we can get good sleep every night. There's this app called the Circadian Life app. I think it's just called Circadian, actually, but their Instagram is at Circadian Life or something like that. This app has changed my life, and I downloaded it, and you just put your location in there, and it tells you exactly when sun rises, exactly when UVA rise happens. It also tells you when UVB is happening. UVB light is out and available to you. And UVB light, I didn't even mention this, is the light that our bodies use to create vitamin D. So it'll tell you the best times to go out and expose your skin to the sun to create vitamin D. So this app is awesome. It also gives you reminders on your phone of like when exactly to go out. It also just gives you reminders to take light breaks throughout the day, which is really helpful for your circadian rhythm as well, to signal to your body, okay, this is the time of day. These are the wavelengths of light outside. So your body knows what time it is and when to produce what hormones and what different processes to turn on and off at the right times. The other main thing with light exposure, having a healthy circadian rhythm, trying to reset your circadian rhythm, is to really, really, really make sure you're blocking artificial blue light right when it gets dark. So a lot of people will stop using their phones maybe an hour before bed, or they'll start wearing blue blockers maybe an hour before bed. But as soon as the sun sets is when we have to start blocking artificial blue light. So I guess that's been another big change I've made that's made such a big difference in my sleep, is I got these amber colored blue light blocking glasses. So they're literally like orange, and they're so much more effective than any other blue light blocking glasses I've had. I used to wear like the clear ones, and they would help especially with eye strain throughout the day when I would wear them. But the ones you want to wear right when the sun sets, so right now that's around 6 p.m. is when it's fully pitch black outside, I, at 6 p.m. or around then, start wearing these orange colored blue blocking glasses, and I don't take them off until I go to bed, essentially, which is kind of extreme, and they look a little funny, I'm not gonna lie, but I have noticed such a big difference that I can't stop wearing them. And now when I don't wear them, I am so bothered by the overhead lights and artificial blue light when it's dark out. I just have become a lot more sensitive to it, and I notice such a big difference in how I feel. So I highly recommend investing in a pair. I don't think it has to be expensive. Like, there's a great brand on Amazon you could get for $30, I think. They're called Spectra 479, and they have that amber colored lens that's going to block the correct wavelengths of blue light. So that could be an option. Mine are from a brand called Viva Rays, and I love them. This is not sponsored or anything. I just really like them. But this is another big game changer in terms of just trying to regulate my circadian rhythm and on a larger scale, just live more in accordance with nature, which is what this is all really about, right? We were not meant to be on our screens all day. We were definitely not meant to be living in these boxes with artificial blue light over our heads all night long when it's dark outside. Our ancestors did not do any of this, obviously, and our bodies haven't evolved with the times. These inventions of light bulbs and all these different things, screens, electronics, these are all very new. Even light bulbs are very new in the grand scheme of things. So our bodies haven't evolved to these creations. And that's why getting as close to the rhythms of nature as possible is really, really beneficial for overall health and well-being. It's so important for mitochondrial health. It's so important for hormone health, as I've been saying, but also for longevity and the way that we feel on a day-to-day basis, our energy levels, our mood. It's all interconnected, and light and other circadian signals like food even. So food timing is really important. I mean, I could go into a whole deep dive just on this. So maybe if you're interested and want to learn more about circadian biology, let me know and I could maybe do a solo episode on everything I've learned and been putting into practice. But I would say going back to the sleep and going back to this one idea of resetting your circadian rhythm, I would say to make sure you're getting morning sunlight at the right times, at sunrise and at UVA rise specifically. You can download that circadian app if you want to help you figure out when to best time your exposure, and then block artificial blue light at the correct times too. So right when the sun sets. And on top of the blue light blocking glasses I was talking about, you could do things like put a red filter on your phone, which you can just search on Google how to do. That's also been a game changer for me. And then when I wake up, I leave that red filter on until I get my morning sunlight so that the light that I'm seeing, the first light that I'm seeing in the day, is not this artificial crappy blue light from my phone. And then I also have a red light bulb, a red lamp essentially, that I turn on at night when I'm winding down and getting ready for bed. And I find that that also is really relaxing for me. And not just because of the circadian benefits, but really it just has a calming, relaxing vibe to it, this red light. And I really, really like it for getting my body prepared to sleep. And that brings me to my next tip. Aside from all the circadian stuff, there's other things that I will suggest, believe it or not, for sleep. One of which is making sure that you have a routine in place. Like, we're all so obsessed with these morning routines that we have. And trust me, I love my morning routine. It's the best. But I also think it's really important, equally as important, to have a nighttime routine, a wind down routine, something that you do. So if you don't already have something, pick a habit that you do every single night before bed to start signaling your body it's time to sleep. And this could be something as simple as a calming breathwork session that you do every night, or a quick meditation, or reading for 10 minutes, or it's your skincare, then you lay in bed and you do 10 deep breaths, like something that you're doing every single night that's a routine for you, because that's going to show your body that, okay, it's time to go to bed, you're safe, this is our nighttime routine, and your body will start to recognize that that thing means, okay, it's sleep time, and it's going to help you actually be able to fall asleep more easily. Another thing I like to do, and this could be one of those signals, one of those habits that you do every night to start signaling to your body that it's time to go to bed, listening to frequency music before bed. So I love the artist Miracle Tones on Spotify. That is really great frequency music you can play. They have specific ones, specific frequencies for sleep, which is really awesome. And I find that those just put me in such a deeply relaxed state. So that's a really good option. And then taking a bath as well, if you have that accessible to you, is so relaxing. And making it an Epsom salt bath to get that magnesium in, but also because it's super calming, that's a really great option as well. I find that when I get in the bath at night, if I do take a bath, I am out like within minutes. So I have to like go in really quickly, get out and go to bed because I just fall asleep, something about it. So that could be something else for better sleep. And then I mentioned magnesium in terms of Epsom salt baths. And yes, Epsom salt is just magnesium. A lot of people don't know that, but also, magnesium supplements, specifically magnesium glycinate supplements, are really calming and anxiety reducing and really help people sleep. So that could be something to explore as well if you struggle with sleeping. I find a lot of people find a lot of benefit from taking magnesium glycinate and they don't even need that much. Just, you know, 1 to 2 capsules. Usually they're 100, 120 milligrams per capsule. Is enough to see a difference. And then the last thing for sleep that I'll say is having consistent wake and sleep time. So trying to go to bed at the same time every night, including weekends, which I know isn't feasible for a lot of people. And I don't even do that most weekends. It's usually a little bit later, but trying to sleep as close to your normal bedtime as possible and then waking up as close to when you normally wake up. There's this idea that I've been very interested in, passionate about lately, and it's this idea of social jet lag. And social jet lag basically means, if you haven't heard of this term, it's like having two separate sleeping patterns, which is often what a lot of us, like I just said, have. We have a different sleeping pattern, sleeping schedule for the weekend than we do for our weekdays. And this is really common, but it's also really detrimental to our health. And the health detriments are mostly because of how this social jet lag affects our circadian rhythm. For example, I live in LA, so let's say I wake up at 6 a.m. on weekdays, and then on the weekends, I end up waking at around 9 a.m. That is like having a 3-hour jet lag every single weekend, right? It's kind of like going to New York on the weekends from LA and then trying to come back to LA and come back to your normal sleep schedule after you've spent the weekend in New York 3 hours ahead. So it's definitely a shock to our bodies and not normal for us to be dealing with this weekend after weekend, week after week. And it also affects our light exposure and when we're able to get light. If we're waking up at 9 a.m. on the weekends, we're missing the sunrise light. We're missing that UVA rise window, most likely, depending on what time of year it is, because also the timing of these things obviously changes depending on the season. And I think that the lack of proper light exposure that comes with the social jet lag, along with the lack of having a consistent sleep and wake cycle, which is also really important to have a balanced, healthy circadian rhythm, these are the reasons that there are so many health risks associated with social jet lag. So there's studies that suggest that social jet lag increases the risk of heart disease, obesity, type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, all these different things, depression, anxiety, irritability, mood swings. There's so many different effects. And these are also the things that happen when we just have circadian rhythm disruption, not just related to social jet lag, but any type of disruption, like too much blue light at night, even if you're waking up at the same time and going to sleep at the same time, or lack of proper light exposure. Once again, regardless of whether you're waking up and sleeping at the same time every night, every day, or not. So I know I just talked your ear off about sleep and circadian rhythms for quite some time, but I hope I got my point across that really resetting your circadian rhythm and having a healthy, balanced circadian rhythm that is aligned with that of nature is very, very crucial to good sleep, but also so many other things. And I hope some of those other sleep tips were helpful as well. The next question is about bloating. Someone asked for bloating recommendations. Everything I tried doesn't work. Have tried peppermint capsules, Gas X, etc. Okay, so I can't answer specific medical questions or things that are specific to you, but in general, some bloating tips that I have are actually peppermint capsules. They usually tend to be effective. If those haven't worked for you, other things are walking, moving your body, making sure you're not having liquid with your meals. So if you're going to have water, have it 20 minutes before your meal at least. And that goes for other beverages as well. And then also carbonated beverages can be a big contributor to bloating and also gas. So just kind of avoiding those if you're really prone to be bloated, or if you're trying to not be bloated for a specific thing. Another thing is fluid balance. So just making sure you're getting enough potassium. Oftentimes we are trying to reduce our sodium intake and reduce salt to help prevent bloating or fix bloating, but we actually need sodium. It's really, really important for our bodies. It is a really crucial mineral for stomach acid production, for fluid balance, of course, but for so many other things. It's really important for cell membrane permeability. It's important for blood sugar balance. Sodium is really important. So instead of decreasing sodium intake, I actually like to see people increasing their potassium intake. And potassium and sodium are synergistic. So together, they work to maintain fluid balance in our bodies, which is often why when people have high blood pressure, instead of decreasing their sodium intake. They just need to increase their potassium and they'll see benefits in lowering their blood pressure. So I would say increase your potassium intake and make sure you're getting enough potassium in your day, especially for the amount of sodium you're eating, to help with fluid retention in general and bloating in the abdominal area. Some of my favorite sources of potassium are aloe vera juice and coconut water, but most root vegetables, fruits, they all are pretty good sources of potassium. And then there are certain electrolyte powders that are pretty high in potassium specifically. There's also potassium like supplements, but I don't really think that that's necessary. I would say, especially if you deal with constipation, the aloe vera juice is really helpful. I am a big fan. And then the last thing that really helps me when I get bloated is lymphatic massage and abdominal massage. So doing a lymphatic drainage massage on my belly, and then there's also just different belly massage techniques to help with digestion, to help with bloating. And you could search YouTube, you could go on the internet and find so many different videos that are helpful. So I don't have like a specific one that I like, but looking into abdominal massage would be helpful as well, I think. And then if you have really bad bloating, gas, any other GI symptoms that are persistent, that are chronic, that don't get better with any sort of intervention, then I would highly recommend working with a practitioner, getting that checked out, getting a deeper look at your gut through testing. I think test, don't guess is really important. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing a gut protocol for something like SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, if you didn't test for it and you didn't see that that was actually going on in your gut. But SIBO could be the root cause of your really persistent bloating. So I would highly recommend getting something like a GI map. That is one of my favorite tests to run on people. And there's another one called GI Effect, which is very similar. These are stool tests. So working with a practitioner, whether that's me or someone else, to help you get answers in terms of what's going on with your gut when it's something a little bit deeper. Okay, next question. Someone said, best cooking oils. I like to cook with, if I'm going to cook with oil, an extra virgin olive oil or pure avocado oil. Some avocado oils, which I was shocked to find out, and then I was like, nope, this is pretty in line with the rest of what's going on in our food industry, so I'm not that surprised anymore. Some avocado oils, essentially, are not just avocado oil, but they're avocado plus something else, and it's often more inflammatory seed oils. So just make sure you're getting the pure avocado oil. I think Primal Kitchen makes one that's 100% avocado oil. There's a ton of different brands. And then for extra virgin olive oil, I would make sure to get it in a dark glass bottle so that it doesn't get rancid, basically. That's really important to preserve the oil for as long as possible. But yeah, I don't really cook that much with oil, to be honest. I find that I like getting my fats from other sources, just like how whole foods are better than eating processed foods. I find that eating the whole fat is better than having just the oil stripped from the fat. So for example, I like to eat olives instead of olive oil, or I like to eat avocados instead of avocado oil. That's just where I like to get my fat, because then it has the fiber intact. It has all the other phytochemicals and nutrients from that food instead of just processing it down to just the fat. It kind of degrades a lot of the nutritional quality of that food. So that's just my opinion on oil. I'm not anti-oil. I have oil. I cook with oil sometimes. It's just not something I do all the time, because I'd rather in my day of eating get my fat from other sources that are more whole foods, or from the meats I'm eating and other animal-based foods that I'm eating. A lot of those have fat in them. So that, on top of the other fat-based foods like olives, like I said, avocado, some seeds, some nuts, all these things add up. And then adding oil to everything just tends to make a lot of people overeat on fat, is what I find. And I feel better. That's the most important thing, is I feel better eating whole food sources of fat. So that's my little rant / thoughts on oils. I, once again, I'm not anti-oil, but just wanted to share a different perspective that maybe you haven't heard before.
Okay, the last question I'm going to answer today is my favorite one. And this person asked, how do I stay motivated on my wellness journey? And I think this is really important because that word motivation is what I kind of want to touch on. I don't think, and this is like very cliche, I know, but I don't think we're going to be motivated every day. I think you have to just instill discipline in yourself. And that is how you really are able to find long-term sustainability on a wellness journey, is being disciplined and committed to your goals. And for me, the motivation comes where it's like, I know how miserable I am when I don't feel good in my body. I know what it's like to feel sick, unwell. And so just not going back to that is a big driver for me. But also, I have a super sensitive body and I am very aware of how I feel when I don't feel healthy. It's very immediate for me. And for me, I can't show up in my life the way I want to if I'm not feeling healthy. It's that simple. So if that's not the case for you, maybe you can get away with, you know, doing things that are less healthy and not feeling it as much in your body. Everyone's so different, but the thing I'll say is that find the thing that drives you to feel healthy. Maybe you are listening and you have kids and you want to be healthy so you can play with your kids. It can be that simple as well. It doesn't have to be anything crazy, but find your why, because that's what's going to keep you committed and disciplined. And coming back every day, showing up, keeping the promises you make to yourself is also really important. So another thing I'll say is don't make promises you can't keep to yourself. Make it easy for yourself. Don't say I'm never going to eat chocolate again, for example. Just make it so that it's not as frequent, or do something that's going to be achievable for you. That's another way to increase the longevity and sustainability of your health wellness journey. And that's really what increases motivation, is when you know that it's something that you can do long term. So with that, I hope that that was helpful. I hope that this whole episode has been helpful and that you learned something new today. I'm very passionate, if you couldn't tell, about circadian biology right now. So that did take up a good portion of the episode, but with good reason. And if you want me to do an even deeper dive, I have lots more to share on that. So let me know. Let me know what you thought of this episode over on Instagram at Ava Nouri Wellness. Make sure to give me a follow so that you can stay tuned for when new episodes come out. And then also for future Q&As, you can participate if you are following along. And last but not least, make sure to give this show a 5-star rating and review, please, if you haven't on Apple Podcasts. That is what helps this show grow. And stay tuned for the next episode. Next week, I have a really incredible guest episode coming out with Dr. Ryan Monahan. It is so good. If you liked this episode, if you like the more wellness, holistic health, alternative health episodes, then you are in for a treat. Stay tuned. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. And I will talk to you all in next week's episode. Bye.